You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And we're just here briefly to introduce episode 2 in the Adam Blythe interviews series. The Lotto Soudal rider, former British champion, has been doing some interviews on behalf of the Cycling Podcast. Last week it was Caleb Ewan. This week, Lionel, it is
Luke Rowe,
the Team Sky rider captain, can we call him?
I think we can call him their road captain after the way he rode at Paris-Nice recently. He was calling the shots, wasn't he? Like
the seasoned pro that he is.
Yeah.
Seems only yesterday that he was joining Team Sky as a promising young rider back in 2012, I think that was. In this interview, they go right, well, they go back a long way together, Adam Blythe and Luke Rose. We'll hear all about their origins in cycling together and how Luke Rose's career has developed since then, and you know what he might be looking to do in his beloved classics, which are coming up.
Yeah, and well, Luke Rowe has said that he wants to get a result to go a bit better than his fifth place from the Tour of Flanders a couple of years ago.
Before we hear that, we should say a big thank you to our headline sponsors, Rafa. The new Rafa shoes are now available, the classic and explorer designs, created entirely in-house and following years of experience and research with tens of thousands of kilometres of wear testing. The classic shoe has already been raced this year in the World Tour by EF Education First riders. And the Explorer shoes have been tested by mountain bike and cyclocross riders all over the world. They are available now, and you will find more details at rafa.cc. Also available now are the EF Gone Racing films from various races already this year, but the latest one is Milan Sanremo, and there are some coming up from some of the Flanders races as well. Subscribe to Rafa Films on YouTube. You'll also find a James Whelan interview, James Whelan, of course, of EF Education First. That's also on rafa.cc. And now, over to Adam Blythe.
You are listening to a special episode of the Cycling Podcast. Adam Blythe interviews.
Right, we're on. Podcast number 2. Today, we're in Adelaide, South Australia. Special guest, Luke Rowe. Bit of a story, really, on us. How we know each other, not us together, but yeah, me and Luke go way back, eh? It's like, I think I was 5 years old when I met you, 6 maybe, down at, I think it was Maindy.
Portsmouth,
was it? Oh, there you go, Portsmouth track. So, yeah, since we were, I think I must have been 6, you were 6? You're a bit younger than me, aren't you? 6 years old, maybe, yeah.
8 and 7,
right, we'll go with 6, just make it sound better. So when we were like 4, mate, now when we were 4, we met racing. And then, yeah, we've pretty much, up until when I was academy, really, we just raced together constantly, like, in abroad, over in Belgium. So we've known each other a while. And we always say this quite a lot when we're together now, isn't it weird? Yeah. Like, being here now, doing what we love, what we started doing. Like, Swifty is not here, G's not here, but sort of like that same kind of crew, really. So, yeah, anyway, I don't know where I'm going with that, but it's a little background on where me and Luke sort of met and grown up and what we're still doing now. So, any good memories really from we're growing up? Can you remember anything fun?
I can just remember the first time I met you. And so me and my brother went up with my parents to Portsmouth for a track meeting, and you and Swifty rocked up, and first time we seen you, and you both had these massive matching blonde fringes, just like just dyed your fringes. You were both matching, and we just like, so I was racing you, and then Swifty was racing my brother in the older category, and we were just like, who are these pair? Had all the best kit, had like Kevin Winter bikes with deep sections, and yeah, I think I was a bit mentally cracked before the race even started, but yeah, that was the first time I met you. I think we were 2.
Yeah, I remember that actually, because you borrowed your dad's front wheel. It's back in the day, like the TT bikes used to be smaller wheels in the front, didn't they?
Yeah.
So you had a zip wheel with a big gold Hope hub on there, I remember it now. And your brother racing, I forgot about him. Yeah, good old back in the day. So yeah, then we grew up quite a bit, raced all our lives pretty much together, and then stopped. And like, this is more on you now, about when you were, you went from pretty much after junior, you didn't go straight into the academy, did you? You did 1 year JLT, 3 years academy or 2 years academy?
No, I was JLT as a... Yeah, so I was went to, it was Rafa Condor Recycling back then, but I rode for them as a junior. So yeah, first year junior, rode for Glendine. No, under 16, I upgraded to a junior. Because I just preferred road racing rather than crit. So last year junior, rode for Glendine, and then my two proper years junior, I rode for, first year was Rafa Condor Recycling, I think. And yeah, it was like Chris Newton was there, Graham Briggs was there, and I was just like this little, yeah, pretty cool actually, riding with them boys when I was just a junior. And then second year was Rafa Condor, and that was like proper mint kit. I loved it. You know, being in the junior ranks, it's all about having the best kit, isn't it? Yeah. And then, yeah, 3 years on the academy. Worked with quite a few different guys there. Darren Tudor, Max Ciandri, Chris Newton. So it was just after Rod left that I came, 3 years there, and then on to Sky. And phew, years go quick. Here we are, 7 years later.
Crazy, really. And you're like, back to the academy stuff now. It's changed a lot, obviously, since Rod was there and then you were there and stuff. I'm going to ask this question to a few people, but, you know, like, knowing what you know now, would you go back onto the academy now, or would you take a different route to try and get where you are now? And do you think you'd have got here without the academy?
I think, like, if you're good enough, you're good enough, and you'll make it whatever route you take. If you look at, you know, all the different routes to professional cycling, like, yours was obviously pretty different. Went over in Belgium and kind of did it off your own back, and you see different people taking different routes and paths throughout their career. But I think, you know, if you're good enough, you're good enough. Whatever route you take, you'll rise to the top. I think for me, I probably would go back to the academy. It was the easy, straightforward option at the time, going from that junior British program, stepping straight into the under 23 British program. And I'm not really sure how it's changed, but it does seem to have changed a bit. I don't know whether for the good or bad, but it seems to have changed a little bit over the years. But for me, them 3 years were awesome. I mean, we were at a time where we had a real good bunch of guys, and I was lucky enough to be in the system then where in the summer it was based out in Corato in Italy. So we had Max Ciandri looking after us there, but all the British pros were there. So you could train with, you know, Cav, Steve Cummins, Pete Kenner when he stepped up, G, Swifty. So you're an under 23 squad, but you're training with, you know, 5, 6, 7 of the best British pros. So that was kind of dream scenario. So I probably wouldn't change it. Go back, do the same thing I did. But I think we were lucky then. You know, like, I think they're based in Manchester now, which doesn't sound quite as appealing. We were lucky that I spent my years there, the summers in Italy, and that was, yeah, I got some pretty fond memories. We had like just a good bunch of lads on the program as well. We had like myself, Pete, Mark Christian, Rousel, Fenn, just like a real good bunch of lads, and we all got on really well. And looking back, yeah, we got up to some right mischief, but it was good fun.
Mischief, eh? So in Manchester, how was it there? You obviously got up to mischief. I lived there for 3 months on my academy stint. Obviously went out quite a lot. So but in Manchester, where we live, was in Fallowfield. You were the same, weren't you? Same apartments. And it was, I moved there when I was 18, got in paid a little bit of money, but basically you're just like let free, aren't you? So when I was there, I obviously went out quite a bit and went a bit mental and never quite made it to Italy. I did a little trump in Italian and got kicked off the squad. But is it similar for you, mate?
Yeah, I think you're at that age where you go from living at home to junior, and then you go to under 23 and you go and move away. And we were in Fallowfield. Yeah, it was the first time where you actually get a paycheck. So it was £7,000 a year, of which half went straight to rent. So that, which left you with £3,500 a year. But even, yeah, which isn't much, but at the time, any paycheck was great. So, and you go there straight into, as you're joining the academy, the students are going there for freshers. So yeah, naturally you just jump straight into the thick of it. But it was, I think you almost kind of, they put us there intentionally just to kind of, you know, make or break you. If you were going to be out on the source every night, then you were going to struggle and doomed to fail. So it was kind of always a balance, you know. We certainly had our fair share of nights out and enjoyed ourselves. But also, looking back, we were 18-year-old kids. It's, you know, if you're moving to an apartment, you look across the road and you see a nightclub and, you know, you're naturally going to go wandering, aren't you? So, yeah, we had a good time. But then as the season started then, we were out in Italy and it was, you know, Kroata's a tiny little village in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, we had our fun in the winter and then we really did knuckle down in the summer. So I think best of both worlds. But yeah, certainly had a good few nights out and some good times.
Yeah, I heard a few stories, mainly of track sessions being a bit hungover and all that stuff, but won't go into that. So then from the academy, you went from, did 2 years in there, and then you went, 3 years in there, and then you went straight into, which is you're still in now, Team Sky, biggest team in the world back then and probably still is now. How did Team Sky come around? And, you know, those first years when I was Neo Pro, holy shit, I was shitting myself when I went into the team. But yeah, how was it for you joining that team and how did it come around really?
Yeah, naturally, I was quite nervous joining the team. I got a phone call off Shane Sutton halfway through 2011 saying, yep, right, contract's on the table, good to go. Had a few other options, but it was...
Who are your options?
I could have gone to BMC. I could have gone, had a trial with Quickstep. Yeah, the year before there was Leopard. But that wasn't a contract, that was just a bit of interest. But yeah, I had a few little offers. But it was, for me, I just wanted to go to Sky. I think most of my mates were there at the time and still are now. And that made the transition pretty easy, actually. You know, a lot of, like, I was obviously nervous because, you know, as I joined, you know, Brad was there, Cav and Bernie, and they joined, and Richie, they joined the same year, that was in 2012. So suddenly you're just stepping into this team and it's achieved massive things. And these guys who you've only ever seen on TV and winning the biggest races in the world, and suddenly they're teammates and you're sharing rooms with them. And of course it's quite daunting, but you soon learn. You know, we're all just human and they're all normal guys and nice guys and they kind of, you know, look after you and show you the routes. But yeah, certainly, like you say, it's going to a new team and, you know, I'm still only, what, 20? So it's still quite daunting. But luckily I had, you know, a lot of my mates there, Swifty, Pete, Stan RG, you know, list goes on, to kind of make that transition quite smooth.
I guess for them boys there, it makes it a lot easier, especially like Swifty, yeah. Stannard as well. You've grown up racing with him, so it's going to be a lot easier. You know, I didn't know about this team stuff before. I just thought you went straight in. There was like no other interest. I thought it was just like,
come on.
Boom. Yeah, come sorry, on. Mate. Not insulting you. Do you look back now and think, obviously, you've been like, you've bloody good career, done the tour 10 times or whatever it is, won about 20 of them, being in that team up there in Flanders. And like, I don't want to sound mean, but you've only got one win.
Two.
Sorry, mate, two.
Yeah.
But do you not think, like, knowing what you know now, if you could take that back to being a Neo Pro, do you think you'd have gone in a different team and gone in as a bit of a leader for classics, maybe like Quickstep, they win everything. Do you think if you went there, you'd still be the rider you've turned out to be now, or do you think you'd be more of a classic rider, sort of like Terpstra?
Yeah, I think, interesting question. I guess the answer is you never really know. But for me, I don't think I'd have changed anything. Whether it would have made me a better rider in the classics, or maybe I'd have had more wins to my name, possibly yes, because obviously in Team Sky, it's a great team. You said it's the best team in the world. I'd say, you know, whether it is or isn't, it's certainly one of the best teams in the world. So whether I'd have gone to another team and perhaps won more races, possibly yes. But for me, I think coming to Team Sky and I'm never going to be a massive winner. I'm never going to win 10 races a year, and it's just not possible for me. So what's the next best option is to go to the biggest races and help other people win. So yeah, I haven't been part of 20, 20 tour wins, but been part of four. Been part of the Vuelta where Froome got second. So just to go to them races and kind of support them guys, I get a big kick out of that. And that's for me, you know, you're never going to go to the tour and win, but to go and support the leader and he wins, that's as good as winning for me. But whether, like you say, whether if I'd have gone to another team, like a pure classic specialist team, will I be better now? I don't know. But certainly I think by going to a team like Sky where, you know, you haven't got a massive classics, you know, winner where you all work for one guy, you know, your Cancellaras, your Boone, and these guys, you do get a bit of free reign in the classics. So while it's not the team's biggest priority, they still put a lot of focus on it and they still support us, you know, unbelievably well through their classics campaign, and you can go in and have your own opportunity. So no, I wouldn't have changed it, and I'm happy to have looked back and only two wins, one in Tour of Britain because everyone else crashed, and one in Sun Tour 2 years ago. So won a few TTTs. Do you count them? Yeah? No? Oh, okay. They don't count then. So just the two, but hey-ho.
Yeah, sorry, mate. TTs don't count. So you're with TTs. Yeah, but you're with someone, aren't you? So it's like it's a bunch sprint. You all finish at the same time, but there's only one winner, isn't there? So.
I just sit on the back of them.
Yeah, exactly. He's leaving after that. He's going. So yeah, we chatted about Team Sky and being so focused on the tours. You've done how many? Five tours?
Four
tours, and you've Tour de France, and you've won four of them. It's not
helped win
four. Yeah, standing out now. I mean, G last year, it's obviously got to be probably one of the biggest, knowing him from a little kid. But is there anything that stands out of all them tours, which, you know, it was the highlight of it? I think it's the biggest race in the world, and for you riding with G, it's got to be pretty amazing, like growing up with him and stuff. And yeah, any sort of memories stand out from Froome's wins to G's wins or anything like that?
I think they're all different and special in their own little way. I think, so 15, 16, 17, 18, rode the tour. Froome won the first three, and G won, obviously, the most recent one. Winning with G was special, obviously. Like you say, growing up with him, similar to how me and you grew up. But he was, he lived, 3-4K from my house. He had a younger brother. I had an older brother. Four of us did quite a lot together. You know, just little kids, like sleepovers and bombing around the streets on BMXs. And so like to think two little kids bombing around the streets on BMXs and then, 15, 20 years later maybe, riding down the Champs-Élysées with him and he's in yellow was quite surreal. And we kind of had a, you know, celebrations went on for a while after that. We had a good week after. So that was obviously pretty special. But then the ones with Froome were just as special. That first one in 15 was probably the best, probably the highlight of the whole lot. Just, you know, you go through so much shit throughout the whole tour, and highs, lows, blood, sweat and tears, literally. And then when you get to Paris, and obviously he's in the yellow jersey, and they give a special kit for the last day with a little bit of yellow on, just riding along the Champs-Élysées, and we kind of rolled on all in the yellow kit with him on the back in the yellow jersey. That first one was just, spine tingling. So that, I think that's the highlight. Year on year, it doesn't get less special, but that first one just kind of something I'll never forget.
And from now on, obviously, if the team stays and you stay where you are, that's your main focus. Tour each year is what you're going to do, obviously. He's nodding. So, yeah. And next year, Froome and G, head to head. I'm back in G. No offence, Froome, but G I like more, sorry. I'm going to ask you this now, mate. Who would you rather win? If, like, tomorrow was the tour and they were like, right, you got to work for one guy starting and you can't help the other, who is it going to be? Look me in the eye and say it.
Jesus Christ, don't pee about the bush, do you? I'm going to make one friend here and one enemy here. Froome.
Would it?
Yeah, because that would be five and that would be a record, if you ask some people. I think that would be pretty cool if he could get five and get on the same level as, you know, Hino and Merckx, and that would be like that's real history, that, isn't it? So, and especially after winning the Giro and coming third this year, so we had, like, which to him was a disappointment, finishing third in the Tour de France. Obviously, you know, after you've won it, four times, so to finish third's disappointment. Yeah, so I'm probably going to get some Welsh hatred from that. G will probably text me some abuse, but essentially, like, I got asked that before, who would you want to win, who are you loyal to, and essentially just loyal to the team and whoever, you know. It would be great position if we could, you know, it's a long way to go to the tour, anything can happen to me, to them, but it'd just be a great position to go in if we could go in the same as, you know, last year, and go in with two leaders who are on 11 playing field, and it just gives you options, and it's something that not many other teams have. Maybe Movistar have, but to have two top guys, two out of the top, you know, five guys, or, you know, Movistar have two of the top five guys, or two of the top 10 guys like we have, that's just such a privileged position to go in, and strengthens the team so much. So essentially, yeah, I'd back either, but if I had to, if you put me on the spot like that, I'd say Froome Dog. Sorry, G.
I'm pretty surprised at that. I thought you'd go G all day, just because he's been your mate for longest. But I guess so. Five tours would be pretty cool.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, Race Radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of the Cycling Podcast is sponsored by DNA Fit, who provide genetically guided fitness and nutrition insights for training solutions and long-term health benefits. DNA Fit has helped 50,000 people unlock their health potential through genetically personalized fitness and nutrition insights. Last week, I said I'd never crack this joke again, that the number is now 50,001, because Richard, you sent off your DNA sample, and I gather you've had your results back.
I do.
Put us out of our misery then, although my interest in your DNA makes me feel slightly unsettled.
I was stunned by my report, by the findings. You get a lot of information about whether your genes make you better suited to endurance or power-based activities. It tells you about your VO2 response, your recovery speed, injury risk, optimal diet, whether you have any intolerances or are sensitive to things like gluten, alcohol, caffeine. But the big surprise for me was that my genetic profile falls more in the zone of power activities based on variations in my genes. So my power endurance response is 80% power, 20% endurance, which is exactly the opposite of what I would have expected. I don't really know what it means yet. I'll find out in my consultation, but I've devoted most of my sporting life to endurance sport, and I wonder now if I've actually missed my calling.
Is this a roundabout way of trying to say that you should have been Chris Hoy?
Possibly. I don't know much about genes, but I've done a couple of books about sprinting and sprinters in athletics. So I do know this so-called sprinting gene, ACTN3. And I don't have it, so that came as no surprise to me whatsoever. I don't have fast twitch muscles, or not very many of them. So I'm very puzzled by my results, and I look forward to speaking about them with my consultant at DNA Fit, who is Tom Lancashire. That's a name that was familiar to me because he's a middle distance runner who competed for Great Britain at the Beijing Olympics, and that's coming up soon.
So he analysed your results. Interesting, because DNA Fit has robust science. Every gene they look at has at least three peer-reviewed studies on human subjects. And in 2016, they released the world's first genetic exercise intervention-based study, showing that you can discover what kind of exercise works better for you from these kind of tests.
DNA Fit are offering 20% off to our listeners, so start your personalised health journey today by heading to dnafit.com/TCP to access the discount code and discover more. That's dnafit.com/TCP. And next week we'll hear about my consultation with Tom Lancashire. Also sponsoring this episode of the Cycling Podcast is the British Heart Foundation, who organise the annual London to Brighton bike ride, which this year is on Sunday, June the 16th. And we're going to be riding, aren't we, Lionel?
We are. We're putting together a bit of a cycling podcast team, because I'm going to ride, you're going to ride. Rose Manley from the Cycling Podcast Feminine has signed up. Simon Gill, the photographer. Tom Wally, Adam Bowie, Jonathan Rowe, among our production team. It could be quite a gang of us riding from Clapham Common down to Brighton. 54 miles. June the 16th, as you say. It's also Father's Day, so quite a nice day to get out on the bike, ride down to the beach. Looking forward to the fish chips and a pint of beer when I get to the finish already. I actually rode the London to Brighton in 1990 when I was 14. The only time I've ridden it, and I'm investigating the possibility of digging out my 1990 bike and recreating that ride on my 1990 rally bike. But I will update on that. I don't want to put it under undue stress. I'm a bit heavier now than I was back in 1990. So we shall see on that. But the London to Brighton is... It's basically the original Sportive. It's a charity bike ride that's been going for 44 years for the British Heart Foundation's life-saving research. And heart and circulatory diseases are the causes of 1 in 4 deaths in the UK. So it's a ride for a great cause. Of the 54 miles, 17 of those miles will be on completely closed roads. From what I remember of 1990, it was a really great social day out on the bike. It perhaps isn't the hardest challenge ever, although for some riders it will be significant because there's the Ditchling Beacon climb at the finish. You may remember that, Rich, from the old Wincanton Classic. And I think the Tour de France. Did the Tour de France go over Ditchling Beacon in 94? Can't remember, might have to check that. But it's a great day out on the bike, and it really is accessible to people of all ages and abilities. And if you only recently got into cycling, it's the sort of challenge that you could set yourself and realistically achieve the level of fitness for June. The adult entry fee is £45, under 18 entry fee is £40, but we've got £5 off for anyone who wants to enter by going to the website, which is bhf.org.uk/L2B2019. So that's bhf.org.uk/L2B2019. And the code is Brighton5, Brighton and the number 5. So the Cycling Podcast will be there, and hopefully lots of you will be too.
You are listening to a special episode of the Cycling Podcast. Adam Blythe interviews.
Obviously you're going to do a tour next year. You're looking at maybe doing 2 grand tours, or Yorkshire coming up as well. You're looking at that for a big goal. I think G's mentioned it before. I think you mentioned it briefly, but you've not really spoke about it, so it'd be good to know your plans.
Yeah, only 1 grand tour. 1's enough. Anyone who rides more than 1's a year is mental. And then, like you said, Harrogate. It's you know, once in a career opportunity, really. I think... will there be another Worlds in Britain in the next 10 years? Possibly not. So I think, you know, any British pro will be proper pumped for that. And every year, recent years, we've managed to get a full squad, qualify a full team. So that would be obviously massive for any British pro. And, you know, the last 2 years, towards the end of the season, I done my leg in 2 years ago and broke my scaphoid last year. So I haven't ridden the Worlds the last 2 years. To go to the Worlds home turf, it's going to be super tough. So whether it's, I haven't looked at the course properly, so whether it's, you know, suits me, whether there'll be an opportunity for myself or whether it'll be back in someone else, like someone like Swifty could be really good around there. Either way, but just go as good as I can and hopefully put on a good show as a home nation. I think as a home nation, if you look at the success, you know, GB on the road, when riding for our trade teams has been massive. We've been one of the strongest nations in the world across the board. And then if you look at GB as a nation, when you're representing GB, I don't think we've really underperformed, really, haven't we? If you look at the last, since Cav won in Copenhagen, we haven't really done anything. Cav? Yeah, he would have won if he followed Blythe in Qatar, that's true. And he's pretty bitter about that. If you still mention it, he's not a happy bunny. So he should have won, but he didn't follow Blythe. But I think as a nation we have underperformed the last few years. When you look at the list of riders we got and what they've won across the board, that doesn't seem to kind of go over to when you're representing your nation. So I think it'd be a good way to kind of kick things off and try and, you know, really put in a good performance as a nation on home turf and do the jersey proud.
There's one thing I forgot through all this when we were chatting about your little long career. It's your leg.
Oh, yeah.
Completely forgot about it. How is it?
Sorry. Right
now. What happened with it? I know you were on your brother's stag.
Yeah.
You went through a pretty time there. I remember I spoke to a few people. I spoke to Fran, and there was a lot of doubt whether you'd even get back on a bike back then. And getting back for Roubaix and then doing the tour, I think it was 9 months after or something, 8 months or something, and then being as good, and I'd say probably the best you've been since you're a bike rider after all that, it's pretty pretty impressive. But yeah, going back to when you broke your leg, were you yourself? Were you like, this could be the end, or?
Yeah, so I was on my brother's stag do a week or two after the tour in 2017. Letting my hair down, blowing out the cobwebs for a weekend. But it was a morning activity. I think we did went whitewater rafting around midday. And it was just a freak accident. It was kind of high levels in the water, low levels in the water. And we jumped off the riverbank, which was like, it wasn't that high, maybe 4 or 5 foot. And I jumped in a really shallow patch. Someone jumped to my right, someone jumped to my left, and it was deep. And I just hit a shallow patch, and yeah, they were all right. And I was, but it was, yeah, I was sat in a Czech hospital in Prague, and it was, it was horrific. It was, yeah, it was just scary. Then got an air ambulance back to Cardiff and started the rehab there. But it, yeah, the original prognosis was I did the operation. Great surgeon, Anthony Pereira. He did a terrific job. And he came in the room and he said, "Oh, Luke, do you want me to be straight with you?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, just tell me as it is. Don't beat about the bush." He said, "Oh, there's a chance you never ride a bike again." And I was like, "Oh, you know when yeah." And he was he left the room. I was in the room on my own. I just sat there crying. And I was like, "Oh man, this that could be me done." Think, you know, in a hospital room on your own, just being told that. And it was, pretty scary. But then from that moment there, I was just like, no, I'm not having that. I'll try and prove them wrong and get given timescales. You know, in 6 weeks, you'll be able to get out of bed. In 2 months, you'll be able to get into your wheelchair, blah, blah, blah. And all the way along, just tried to beat the time to the next objective, and just slowly, I was surrounded by a great group of people, and I think that's the reason I got back at all, and secondly so quick, is that I was fortunate. I had the best of the best. Everything, whether it was the surgeon who did it, whether it was the person, the physio dealing with rehab, I just got the best of the best. And then obviously it just come down to me putting the hard work in, and for you name it, I pretty much did it. It was pretty relentless, like two, three things a day. It was swimming, physio, walking, just trying to do little things. Then it slowly evolved to riding on the turbo with one leg. And yeah, it was quite a grim few months. It was like a real low. But yeah, just kind of stayed optimistic throughout it all, and returned to racing in Abu Dhabi. That was my first race back. So that was end of Feb. So I did it in August. And so didn't miss that much, really. But I don't think I was top in the classics, but certain, you know, I think I was a bit soon, but certainly going into the tour and California Dauphiné Tour, I think I was the best I've ever been. So it's, yeah, and I'd never stepped foot in a gym before in my life. I didn't know, I couldn't even spell gym. I just, J-I-M. And just avoided it like the plague. And then I just smashed loads of gym because I had to, not because I wanted to. And I think that really helped. And something that I've carried on from the injury is gym work. And I think it's something that I avoided like the plague. And now something that I do, you know, kind of a couple of times a week. So that's something I've taken from it.
I think that's like the difference with Sky, isn't it? You know, if you like, everyone chats about team and how much money they've got and this, that and the other. I think the main thing with Sky is, like you said, you get the best of the best of the best. And it's not like I said in an interview about all these marginal gains. It's not really the equipment that's all the marginal gains. It's all like this stuff that gets you better and gets you better quickly. And I think that's like one thing that everyone tries to do in cycling, but it's just really quite clueless how to do it. And I'm not saying like getting someone recovered, but it's all like the little bits around it that no one sees, which people try to copy, but no one really can catch up with it. So I think, yeah, I think that is Team Sky in my eyes, where they got you back to where you were. I think if you're in another team, you'd have been, say if you're in, I don't know, BMC, it would have been a lot longer road for you, and you still might have been fighting your way back, trying to get into another team now, you know. I think in a normal contract, it's 3 months.
Yeah, so after 3 months, like a UCI rule, if you can't race for 3 months, they can dock your pay, and then after 6, they can dock it further. And that was never even discussed. That was like, nah, don't worry about that. We got you. And I think, so I was laying in that hospital in Prague, and I was thinking, oh, you know, so many things are going through your head at that moment. Like, I hadn't had a prognosis. I just knew I couldn't move my leg, and I was in so much pain. And I got a text off Dave, and he didn't even know what I'd done, how I'd done it. I could have been
blind drunk for all he knew. And he just texted me saying, like, you're one of our own. We'll look after our own. Don't worry about a thing. We got your back. And I think that's, that to me shows, like, what a great guy and he's obviously a great boss and a great manager, but what a great guy he is. Yeah, like, yeah. And you just genuinely, I genuinely felt throughout the whole process that they weren't doing it because I was a colleague and a member of staff. They were doing it because they cared. And yeah, with Dave and Fran and Richard Usher, the doctor in particular, M3, just kind of had my back through the whole thing and genuinely felt like they cared, not because I was a rider, not because they wanted me to get back so I could perform and do my job, just because they wanted me to get back because I'm a human being and they wanted me to be able to ride a bike again. So I think I owe a lot of people, yeah, big thanks for that. But yeah, I think that's where, you know, but at the same time, I gave 6-7 years of my career to the team, and kind of loyal to them, and in return they were super loyal to me. And I think certainly it would be without them guys, it would have been a lot longer road back, if you know, maybe it might have never come back. So yeah, a big thank you to them, sure.
And even more important now, because you're a dad as well. How's that been? I know it's tough being a dad. Hardest part's being away. We both are now. I've had to go and see your little son, actually. He's here, so I've been getting my little baby time in with your little man. Yeah, dad fix. But yeah, how's that been? Has it changed you more as a rider, or has it just made you a bit knackered like me?
Yeah, so little Ollie, Oliver, he's approaching 4 months now. And how old's your little man?
18 months.
18 months, wow. So yeah, that's obviously just a massive change in life. I wouldn't say it's obviously the best thing that can happen to a person. It's just, it's amazing. It's just puts a smile on your face every day, doesn't it? When you wake up and see the little man and he's bouncing around and happy. But yeah, I don't think it's necessarily changed my outlook on life or anything, but it certainly made you think. You just want to make him proud, don't you? And think in 10 years time you can look back and say, oh, well, man actually did something and that was pretty cool. And then obviously you want to do the best you can to support him and the family financially, and you want to be able to support them, and you want them to have the best of the best, and you want not spoil them, but you want to, you know, you want them to have a nice happy life. Yeah, I suppose you do. Yeah, you want to spoil them. So there's that extra little bit of pressure that you just put on yourself to try and do the best you can and do the best for them.
Right, mega. I think that's it, mate. Thanks for coming.
Thanks a lot. What about you? Don't mind talking about you.
I don't talk about me, mate. I'm asking the questions, aren't I? I'm the interviewer. Unless you got a question.
All right. I'll ask you quick fire questions. So I'll hold the mic. I'll ask you a question. You just answer it like straight away. Okay. Roubaix or Flanders?
Roubaix.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Wine or beer?
Wine.
What do you put in a toaster?
Toast.
What do cows drink?
Water.
Oh, good skills.
We'll end on that. Thanks for coming.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. Enter that at the checkout at scienceandsport.com and get all your sports nutrition products there. The best sports nutrition products in the world, of course. And thanks to them for their support of the Cycling Podcast. We heard the second of the Adam Blythe interviews, this one with Luke Rowe. Lionel, you were listening intently to that.
Is that the first time Adam Blythe has said on the record what led to him leaving the British Cycling Academy? He dropped in a...
He wasn't really explicit about that.
He wasn't. Am I going to...
Reading between the lines?
Well,
I mean, we're supposed to be learning about Luke Rowe, not Adam Blythe, but he's revealing something of himself.
He did reveal something of himself. He said that, well, he said that he trumped in Italian, which I believe confirms the long-rumoured reason for his departure from the British Cycling Academy, which was that he let off a loud fart in an Italian class that the riders had to attend.
I suspect there was a little bit more to it than that.
But I think they agreed to, it was a mutual parting of the ways from that point.
Was it mutual? That, yeah. Is that all you took from the interview? I mean, I was quite interested in some of the things Luke Rowe said as well. He could have joined Quick Step, and we wonder how that might have, you know, how his career might have gone had he joined Quick Step. But also that he wants Chris Froome to win the Tour this year rather than Geraint Thomas.
I think joining Quick Step, he's better off where he is. I mean, he's got undisputed kind of leadership credentials in Team Sky for the sort of handful of races that he could get on the podium at, whereas at Quick Step he'd be one of a number, wouldn't he? I mean, he would have a lot of teammates, a lot of support, but he might be the sort of the tenderizing iron rather than the so I think, you know, careful what you wish for in that sort of, he's better off where he is.
Possibly, we'll never know, will we? Anything else you took from that? I mean, he is a rider who, as you mentioned at the start, his performance at Paris-Nice was very impressive. He does look, last year he was coming off that very serious injury, and hadn't heard him talk in as much detail about what happened on his brother's stag do as he did there. But he was coming back from that very serious injury, and the fact that he made the Tour de France team was pretty remarkable. This year he looks like he's got, you know, a full season in his legs, and he looks like a much better rider than last year.
The bit that struck me was just how, I mean, we know that the life of a professional athlete is, you know, sometimes it hangs by a thread, doesn't it? As particularly a rider, you know, who suffers a bad injury, whether in a race or not in a race. But when they were talking about the, if you don't race for 3 months, your salary can, within the UCI rules, be reduced. And after 6 months, it can be reduced further. It really does bring home what a tenuous profession it is. And, you know, whatever people think of Team Sky, they could have taken exception to Luke Rowe getting injured on a stag do and saying, well, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles kind of approach. But they didn't. And I think that says quite a bit for the way the team conducts itself.
And, well, he said he is one of their own, and he is somebody who's come right up through that system and has become a very important captain, you know, leader, a real leader. And his leadership qualities sort of have become more apparent, I think, over the last couple of years. Shall we leave it there, Lionel? We'll be back next week with episode 3 in the Adam Blythe interviews series. Wonder who that will be. Do we know yet?
I don't.
I have a little clue, but I'll keep that as a surprise for now, and I look forward to listening to it. We'll convene again next week. In the meantime, thank you very much to Adam Blythe and Luke Rowe, and thanks, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
You've been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.